is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Afghanistan. A headline from the Military Times. Russian-Chinese diplomats attend conference on Afghanistan. The foreign ministers of four countries met in Samarkand, Uzbekistan, and discussed the need to cooperate with Afghan authorities to maintain political stability and to prevent a humanitarian crisis. This, of course, according to the Russian foreign ministry. And the four countries, Russia, China, Iran, and Pakistan. I welcome Bill Roggio, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, senior fellow. He keeps the Long War Journal with his colleagues. We're looking at a development in Eurasia that has significance given what we just heard from Washington about the catastrophe of the leaving of Afghanistan in August of 2021. Now we have three adversaries, Russia, China, and Iran, speaking of peace and stability and humanitarian crisis in the nation that the Biden administration chose to exit. Bill, there's so many ironies here. I want to come to what we know about Afghanistan's governance right now. I'm led to believe that it's random, that it's gun-based, weapons-based, and that it is constantly needy of cash, not because it is doing so much work for people who might be starving in great numbers, the millions, and certainly just pass through a rough winter without adequate energy, but because it's gangster thinking. The more cash we have, the more powerful we are in the organization. How do you measure Russia, China, and Iran moving into Afghanistan talk now? Is this opportunistic? Are they likely to meet the same resistance the U.S. and NATO met? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. On the issue of the Taliban and its governance, it's working just as the Taliban wants it to. People argue the Taliban isn't inclusive and things like that, and they're correct from their perspective, but it's as inclusive as the Taliban was always going to make it. It can 70% plus of the leadership of the Taliban is made up of the Taliban that was existed prior to 9/11, the Taliban leaders. And then many of those who are new, so supposedly, are individuals like the son of Jalaluddin Haqqani, Sirajuddin Haqqani, or the son of Mullah Omar, Mullah Yaqub. That's what we should have expected. No one should have expected anything different. As far as it's unsurprising that Russia, China, Iran, and Pakistan are now looking to get their claws into Afghanistan. And I don't expect them to have much resistance there because, first of all, this axis of countries was largely responsible for the defeat of the U.S. Pakistan, of course, with the support of the Taliban and Iran as well. This is one of the least known things about the war in Afghanistan, how much Iran was supporting the Taliban. I was involved in a case in October 2021. Where plaintiffs sued his soldiers or family members, soldiers who were killed or wounded in Afghanistan. They sued Iran for supporting the Taliban and as well as Al-Qaeda, and we won that case. The evidence is clear, but these countries don't care about human rights. They don't care about the Taliban not allowing women going to school or going into the workplace. They don't care. You know, they don't care if the Taliban is starving their people. So, yeah, I think they'll have great success in getting into the business of Afghanistan, which is all they really care about, making money and gaining some influence with the Taliban. And as far as the Taliban itself, it's looking to increase its defense budget by one third or increase the size of its military and security forces by one third. Obviously, that takes money. So it tells you exactly what the Taliban think about issues of the people starving, of them not having medicine. The Taliban invests money where it will keep the Taliban in power. Their calculation is their strength is in their power. It is in their security services.
Bill, is it your sense that there is something like a mafia organization in Kabul with bosses and sub-bosses and lieutenants? and teams that go out? Is it that well organized, or is it every man for himself?
Yeah, so it's. I think that's a good analogy, John. The Taliban basically is, you know, when people say the Taliban's divided or things like that, they're wrong. It's the Taliban is split up into what they call mahazas or fronts. So they're different factions or groups of the Taliban. And then when the Taliban set up their government, they gave out the ministries and important positions to members of these factions in order to give them power. So someone gets the interior ministry. That's that's Serhan Haqqani. Someone gets defense. That's Mullah Yaqub, Mullah Omar's son. You know, all of those ministries, they go out to individual factions so they can get their slice. They can put their, get their slice of the pie of Afghanistan. But they are working for the same goal. They actually do, at a high level and at the mid-level as well, agree with the policies put out there by the top leadership of the Taliban of imposing Sharia law and the issues of women's rights and things like that. So you have this, they share a belief system, they have a shared ideology, but they also use their ministries, their government appointments to benefit their clans.
The puzzle also is that early in the conflict with Afghanistan, 20 years ago, China was most concerned about radicalizing its Muslim population, the Uyghurs, now brutalized by the Chinese regime. And Russia was most anxious about radicalizing Central Asia, the stans, not only the stans that are outside their sovereign territory, but inside, the Chechens and the North Caucasus. Has that passed, Bill? Are the radicals of the Taliban now middle-aged men not seen as fervent preachers of their view?
This is complicated, and it has to do with the rise of the Islamic State in South Central Asia. The Taliban is basically selling itself to Russia and China as we can contain the Al-Qaeda types, the groups like the Turkestan Islamic Party, which is in Central Asia and China, or the Islamic movement in Uzbekistan, the Caucasus jihadis. The Taliban are basically convincing these countries that they'll keep a lid on that problem, but that the real threat is the Islamic State. And that, of course, since the Islamic State is an enemy of the Taliban, that works really well for the Taliban. Now, I don't think Russia and China are so naive to think that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda aren't a problem, but they're also dealing with the reality of the situation on the ground in Afghanistan, and they're making the best of it. So they're working with and hoping that the Taliban will contain the jihadists on their side of the fence while targeting the Islamic State, which both Russia and China do consider to be a major problem.
So the Taliban is then a buffer from the radical elements who wander back and forth across all of these countries.
And well, that's how the Taliban is selling itself, and that's how these countries are going to sell the Taliban as. But that only lasts so long. I mean, think about it, John. Prior to 9/11, the Taliban told the U.S. government that it could contain Osama bin Laden, that it can contain Al-Qaeda. And we all saw how that worked. The Taliban said the same thing during the 2000s and 2010s that it contained, but Al-Qaeda and all these other its allied jihadist groups in the area conducted attacks in the Caucasus, in Russia and China, in Central Asia. It's a lot of lip service. If you believe the Taliban when it tells you you could count on it for your security, you're fooling yourself.
Well, let's go to another Taliban fiction. The Taliban's chief spokesman said there are no obstacles for the UN to function in Afghanistan. This following the barring of women from, to my understanding, all institutions, work, education, everything. The country's Taliban rulers took a step further in their restrictive measures towards women and the family. This isn't just women, it's women and the family, women and children. The UN is reluctant, this says. It cannot accept the decision, calling it unlawful and an unparalleled violation of women's rights. All accurate, Bill. Does that resonate in Washington these days? If the UN says there's nothing we can do, is there anything Washington is talking about doing?
Keep in mind, the Taliban is saying, hey, you guys are welcome to do business here as long as you follow by our rules. And those rules are women can't, you know, go out of the house without an escort and their faces covered, and they're not allowed to work, and they're not allowed to go to school and all of those things. Washington, I don't think it cares really much. Washington wants the Afghanistan situation to go away. Look at how the press conferences after that report was released, that how John, you know, spokesman John Kirby was indignant that people could say that Afghanistan withdrawal was chaotic and that the U.S. left millions of dollars of equipment. He was wrong, and we left billions of dollars of equipment in Afghanistan. They want this issue to go away. They just want to placate the Taliban. So, you know, there's individuals within the U.S. government that find all of this abhorrent, but the Biden administration itself really doesn't care about Afghanistan. It's got bigger fish to fry. It wants to, you know, turn to the global power competition. It wants Afghanistan to go away, to be put in the dustbin of history.
One more Afghanistan story. Washington Post. They helped the CIA in Afghanistan. Now they're suffering in America. It features a very unhappy story of a man with his family. His name is Tabesh, living in Baltimore in what appears to be an unhappy part of Baltimore because of crime. He's one-legged from the combat, and his prospects are dim. The story goes on in great detail about how he needs help. I know something of families in other parts of the country who've been absorbed by churches, NGOs, good works organizations. It doesn't seem to have happened to this man. Is this a story in Washington that not only did we leave behind hundreds, perhaps thousands of people who are at risk because of the Taliban repudiation, but also the people who came to America seem to be taken care of in a random fashion? Does that resonate in Washington?
At this point in time, it doesn't. You know, it does with individual members of Congress and with, you know, veteran groups and whatnot. But, you know, again, the Biden administration, if it was to directly address these issues like this unfortunate man. And let's be honest, though, he's probably more fortunate to be having a hard time here in the United States than he would having probably would be hunted down and killed. He was a member of what they call the Zero Units, which operated in eastern Afghanistan and Pakti against the Haqqani network and other dangerous Taliban groups. He wouldn't be alive today if he was still in Afghanistan. So as bad as it may be here for him, he probably is a lot more lucky than he may think. But this is an issue that, you know, right now the administration, again, if it was to take the issues like this head on, it's an admission of its faults in Afghanistan. Okay. And this administration, as we saw recently, doesn't want to take any responsibility for Afghanistan.
Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a senior fellow keeping the Long War Journal on the Afghanistan war, which in all guises continues. I'm John Batchelor.